we're buffering. Stream buffering.
Still haven't figured out a way around that.
YouTube.
Right in the middle of the action.
I can guarantee you the throughput for the internet here is where you're next.
I think I'm gonna be sick.
Well, at least you're sober this time.
Let's think on that one.
Not by choice, Trish.
For the inevitable outbreak of violence.
Because if you can't control it, then Borok, Buckley, and the Micronobians are all going to die.
Don't care. Gotta go.
This buffering is gonna kill me.
Oh. Okay.
Ah, full screen.
Oh.
I agree.
Them's fighting words.
Now, let's not start a fight now.
Later.
I've got plenty of time to do that.
Yeah, down the hall and to the left.
Swill, 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 swill.
I so don't know why I'm here.
Oh. It breaks right at the
It knows
very,
where the punchline is.
Smell bacon.
Well, that happened.
Directed by Donald P. Belisario.
It's only got like 1 second left. What's there to buffer?
It's a climactic title.
Yes.
Hooray! Well, that was the teaser trailer for Star Command, which I'm a part of. And do they want to show the one for 31?
Yeah, they can.
It's youtube.com/user/31webseries.
Just user, one user.
Yeah.
/31webseries. And somewhere in that list is a trailer.
Yeah, at the bottom.
A teaser.
At the bottom of the list. I think that's episode one.
It's 30 seconds.
This is episode one.
Yeah, pause it.
Yeah, just pause it and let it upload.
That's episode one.
No.
Good things come
I think that's episode one and not actually the trailer.
By
yeah, the trailer. If you go down the list on the... What is it? I
can't remember. No.
Yeah, that's episode one.
No! No! Oh God! Oh God! Where am I? On the boat.
All the way
transmission,
down.
Transmission.
Go down to the bottom.
Very bottom.
What are they gonna do to us?
Brought to you by Ancient Mineral.
Apparently.
And Charlie's
Angels. And Charlie's
Angels.
Well, I guess we ought to introduce ourselves. I'm Ben Boardman. I'm the executive producer of Star Command.
well, and some other things. Why don't you guys include all your roles all right, and titles?
Executive producer, director, writer,
actor.
Yeah, everything that you can pretty much think of, except for sound engineer, which, you know.
Do we have one of those?
I don't know, maybe.
I guess you should be next. You're next in line.
I'm Eric Koski. I'm a set designer and sort of indirectly one of the actors.
I'm Jason Carlisle. I'm also a co-producer, also a camera op, sometime writer, actor, and that's a prop maker.
I'm Zach Gaskins. I'm the line producer. I also play Commander Borok, and I kind of do an all jack of all trades thing.
Yeah.
Craft services, especially.
Craft services.
I'm Amy Peterson, and I'm the sound engineer on both Star Command and 31.
I'm Lucy Kroll, and I'm the writer director of 31.
I'm Steven Schweiger. I'm the cinematographer and kind of specialize in low-budget production, mostly with DSLRs.
I'm Ben Bryant. I played the character 30 and 31.
Well, why don't we talk a little bit to start off with how we kind of got started making web series. I think that's kind of a from a producer standpoint, I just kind of decided one day that I didn't want to go through the studio system and I could probably make something halfway decent. My initial training is in theater. I had a theater background and spent a lot of time doing very low budget theater plays and things like that, and finally got into actual filmmaking, learned how to edit, and over the course of years you gain a lot of skills, and so at about 4 years ago, we started working on coming up with Star Command itself, and then we started bringing on people, and it sort of snowballed, and now we've got this big, huge production, and that has spiraled out of my control. So that's kind of how we got started, or at least I got started.
Well, 31 actually came from my efforts to be a screenwriter. I had written several feature scripts and, you know, won contests and things like that, but it's just very hard to break into the system just through screenplay, so I started directing my own stuff, you know, making short films and things like that. And I got the idea for 31 actually September 17th a year ago, so it's not even a year old that we managed to pull all of this off, which still amazes me. Just, you know, wanted to see if I can make it happen, you know, pull something together, put it online and have something to show, where you can just, it's just much easier when you're trying to, you know, contact people and get things done to send them a link than send them a script. And people will look at a link when they won't, you know, have the time to read a script. And, you know, I've managed to pull in some incredible, incredible talent here, you know, wonderful crew, and make something really cool happen. So it's still kind of new, but it's cool.
And go ahead.
I was about to say, you're so lucky. I've just got these jokers to work with.
But I'm just curious, how many people in here make a web series already?
Awesome.
Very cool. And
how many are thinking about it or want to do it, but you haven't yet? A lot. Mm-hmm. Wow.
So what's holding y'all back from doing it?
That's easy to fix.
Get a camera and get your friends together and just do it.
That's pretty much, yeah, that is the best advice any of us can give, which is, you know, don't wait on it. Cameras can be gotten either cheap or you can borrow. Odds are you know someone with a camera. That's the first step is getting a camera and getting some people in front of it.
And get a good script.
Yeah, get a good script, yeah.
If you have an iPhone 4, you have an HD camera. So I mean, they're great looking for what they are. But yeah, don't wait until you think you can do a good job. Don't put it off.
Yeah.
Just do it.
Yeah, definitely don't try to do it right first. Just do it.
Perfect is the enemy of done. Just do it. The only way you can learn is, or the best way to learn really is by doing it. So just jump in, get your hands dirty, get your feet wet, and go.
Yeah, if you have some kind of ideal project in mind that you want to do someday, maybe you can do that someday. But go ahead and just jump in.
with a web series or whatever first, even if it's doesn't, you know, if it's not that amazing, big, huge project, that vision you have in your head, just start by doing something and use this as your training ground to get your feet wet and get your people together so that maybe you can do that big thing someday.
And I don't know, maybe some of these people can answer like how you go about finding a sound engineer or a director of photography. I can say that if you're looking for actors, there's a lot of websites out there. Like there's one website called Love to Act, where basically a lot of people who are kind of beginning and intermediate actors go to looking for work because they're trying to kind of break into the industry and build up their resumes. And so they're looking for unpaid work, and a lot of times those people are extremely enthusiastic about being a part of any project. Generally, I think that when you're in an independent project, a lot of times you're really appreciated, and so that the, you know, those beginning and intermediate actors really feel that appreciation coming from you, and they're going to give you a lot in return.
To add to that, they really do give 110%. There were no stunts written in my script. There are stunts that he does in that script. There are stunts that he does in the film that aren't in there, and risk life and limb to give that extra, you know, 10% and over the 100% and nearly killed himself at least 3 times.
Yeah, they stopped me a few times because they were afraid like I was going to like bust my head open on some logs and like crazy stuff.
We were going to bury him in the backyard. We didn't want that.
Yeah, we have one of those.
I tried so hard to get our big guy to hit me in the head with a lunch tray and he wouldn't do it.
No.
Address is at lovetoact.com.
It's lovetoact.com. It's the number 2, love, and then the number 2, and then act. But there are other websites like I know that Southern Casting Call is a website. There's a website called Now Casting. So you might just be able to Google like something like, you know, how do I find an actor for an independent project or something like that. Mm-hmm. Something like that. So I'm sorry, I think she had a question.
Yeah.
I just wanted to bring up the point about just doing it again. This is the second or third panel I've heard this at just today. Mm-hmm. And so that's how you come to go. So reiterate that.
Well, that is, yeah. I mean, that is for anything. It doesn't matter what project you do. It's the 90% of the roadblock is starting. You know, and then once you start, the big roadblock is finishing. Yeah. So, you know, once you start, you know, once you've decided you want to do a project, start it. And once you've decided that you're going to start a project, finish it. It doesn't matter if it comes out good or not, because 9 times out of 10, yeah, what you come out with is not going to be that great. Yeah. But that's that one try, and you learn something from that try.
Yeah, and part of that is learning, too. I mean, it's never going to look the way you imagine it up here. It's just not. Things
sometimes
are going to happen,
and some things will look a lot better.
Some things will turn out better.
What's really great is that's an awesome chance to learn, and it's an incredible learning process.
Exactly.
Yeah. You get out in front of your camera, and you do a few things, and you think, well, that wasn't as hard, but next time I want to do that and this other thing too, and it seems so much easier to go incrementally than it does to just out of the blue try to make something like Michael Bay. It's not necessary to do that. You can be just as entertaining as that without nearly that kind of effort.
Yeah, I don't know if there are any software developers in the audience, but the term agile works here.
Yes.
Take a big task, start with something very small that you know you can accomplish, and then from there determine what's the next step. How do I make it better from there? And keep going, and one day you will have that big project, you know, and it won't seem like a daunting task anymore because you've worked your way up to it.
That's actually... Oh, I was just going to say really quickly, that's actually one of the ways we were able to do 31 in the amount of time that we did. It's the whole idea is 31 episodes that are each only 31 seconds long. And then we ran them for 31 straight days in sort of the classic serial fashion of, you know, an internet serial, and promoted it as an internet event. And because we took on such small, you know, episodes, we were able to film a lot in a short amount of time with a smaller budget and, you know, and yeah, with our fun 2-day schedule that, you know, in our freezing warehouse. But we got it done, and so it's, you can end up doing a much bigger project than you might think, and it might turn out even better than you think, you know, if you just go ahead and dive in and see what can happen. And as to what he was saying about, you know, where you get actors, a place to hook up with people who, you know, DPs, you know, sound engineers, there's Atlanta 365, which is what was formerly Image, and it's also the Atlanta Film Festival. They have a great website, connection base, and also Women in Film, which isn't just for women. Anybody can join. And that's how I actually got referred to my sound engineer, and who is awesome. This is the best audio supervisor ever.
My business cards are in the back over there.
Everybody's business cards in the back. Best DP ever, you know, best actor, you know, that I've worked with in a long, long time, you know, and stuntman, does his own stunts. And best editor also through Women in Film, Mike Bruno, who did an incredible job with our editing. I mean, just beyond, you know, professional life. If I saw, if, you know, I saw something that I liked on, you know, oh, I love the way they did those credits in Super 8. Oh, I can do that. It was done. So you can definitely find the people you need to work with.
Just to add to that real quickly, I'm sorry, but there's also an event that I've been to once, but it's called Get Connected, and it brings together actors, directors, producers, lots of people in the industry. If you Google Get Connected, it's the last Thursday of every month. I think it only cost me like $10 to get in there, but it's a great way to meet people in the independent film industry and internet stuff. And then once you've produced something, it's also a good way to showcase your work. You know, you can, I think you can email info@getconnected.com to find out more. You can just Google it. So,
yeah, and the women's group that Lucy was talking about, it's Women in Film and Television Atlanta. It's WIFTA.org. It's part of an international organization. But like she said, anybody can join. You don't have to be female. And their events, they have a lot of events that are free for members, but they're open to the public for like a $5 or $10 charge or whatever. So you can get in on stuff there too.
What's your question?
Hi, I have a question about funding. I was wondering you had the most success with finding funding. Like, people have suggested Kickstarter and things like that, but yes. Okay. Any other suggestions in terms of funding?
We were entirely funded through Indiegogo,
which is like Kickstarter.
Yeah. It's. You know, it's, each one has its advantages. Indiegogo suited us. I think the difference is Kickstarter, if you don't reach the amount that you set out, it doesn't. They don't pay or something.
Yeah, with Kickstarter.
Ours was, we had a very cheap budget. We did our entire web series for $390.
Wow.
I mean,
wow.
Like, we had somebody that was, like, baking us food and, like, bringing it so that we didn't have to.
Food,
I mean,
for film.
Yeah. Speaking of funding and budgets, we should add that none of us get paid for this.
Yeah.
That's
not yet. So far, it's all volunteer stuff. That's kind of one of the problems with web series is that people haven't really figured out how to make money from it yet. But there's some big web series starting to get produced now by people who are actually in, like, television on networks. There's a new web series called Divine that's done by some of the people that are involved with the show on the CW. So they know what they're doing, and they're trying to see if it flies and if they can figure out a way to start making money from it. So maybe we can all learn from that.
He has a question. You have to have the mic.
We have a cafe press store on our website.
Let him go, because he's got it.
Hi.
Hi.
I produced three web series already, and what I've found is that, and I don't know, and this is for the producers and directors and writers, do you have plans on branding your entertainment? Because that's where I found a lot of success with my hooking up with either partners or people in other verticals, other brands that wanted to, instead of in essence making a series, making almost like a long-form commercial. Do you have plans with Star Command and any other iteration of 31 to do that? And also for the line producer, what was your schedule like for Star Command, and did you budget it out as a complete series, or did you do it episode by episode?
Well, basically, we have plans for a six episode season.
Yeah, well, it started out six. We narrowed it down to three.
We ended up having four months?
It stretched over 4 months.
Four-month schedule to get all three of that, all three of those episodes shot to do pre-production and to actually do the filming. And then beyond that, we've rolled out the episodes.
Well, I think what he's asking is we actually, in the scheduling, we took the three episodes and we knew we were going to be filming The Bridge. So we'd filmed those all in a weekend. and then go from there. So we ended up being very confused a lot of the time, but we did get through. We shot by set usually was how we split it up. And as far as branding, I have said this to my crew many, many times. I am a complete sellout. I will shill for food, you know. So I'm totally okay with vertical branding. I'd love to get involved in that. That is one big thing that, yeah, I'll put Doritos in every show. Yeah, I'm fine with that.
Yeah,
waffles we have plans for.
That's definitely something we're hoping to do as well. We've gotten so far about 3 distribution deals that have come to us with Authentic.com, BeatX, and MyPod Studios. And I'm taking a lot of meetings with people about the concept of branding the 31-second episode, you know, sort of the micro series concept, and having, you know, a sponsor who would have their, you know, name on something for 31 straight days, you know, leading up into, you know, a sale, a season, whatever month they go. So we'll see, you know, how it goes and who bites, and if so, you know, that would be something that we definitely try and brand, you know, because it would be awesome to, you know, continue to do and, you know, work with all these guys again and actually get paid, which would be great. Mm-hmm.
One thing I'll add on the scheduling note, figure out how many shooting days you're going to need and then multiply that by about 1.5, because you will have no shows. You will have days where the power goes out. You will have days where weather prevents people from showing up.
Ice cream truck.
It wouldn't go away. Yeah. It just made laps around the block.
Oh, like, there was a dude working on his stereo system in his car, and we had to kindly tell him to turn it down, and it didn't help. And there, fortunately, he was a really nice guy, but it could have been.
Ask the neighbor if he can please mow his lawn later.
Yeah, things like
stuff
that.
Like that. Yeah.
Tell the crickets to please stop chirping. That didn't go well.
No, that didn't go well.
Aircraft circling over our
studio.
Oh, yeah, there's
so many airplanes everywhere.
And trains.
Trains.
Constantly.
Yeah.
Trains.
So as hard as you try, people are going to flub their lines. People are going to make uncontrolled noises offset that are going to set your schedule back no matter what you plan for. So just try to roll with the punches.
Yeah, just one thing particular to Star Command is there's you guys have been using a lot of actors that have a theater background.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
So they're not used to filming, so that kind of took a little extra time sort of getting everybody used to how filming works, and you know, just it's a different kind of acting. And so, you know, if you're just getting your friends or whatever to help you, you know, you might have people that don't really know how to act on set or whatever, and that's going to take you some extra time too.
Plus, Amy's major complaint about theater actors is the way they project into the microphone.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't have to project; the microphone's right there.
And you will, when you review all the footage you've shot, you will notice scenes missing, and you will swear you filmed it, but you won't be able to find the footage, so you're going to have to go back and do pickups and everything. So, you'll need to pad your schedule.
My question is, I noticed while the trailer for 31 was playing that the little Google pop-up ad came up, so it looks like you all are members of the Google Partner Program. Congratulations on that. My question is, have you seen any revenue from that yet?
We were just talking about this earlier. So far, we've netted a solid $1.17. So we're very excited about it. Thank you. It's, anytime you have, like, ad revenue deals, there's just not tons of money in it, you know. It's like, by the time you've gotten enough views to get the ad revenue, you know, I mean, the way our series was set up, it's like, you know, we'd get 1,000 views in a day, and then, you know, the next day, not as many on that one and on the next one. So, you know, it is what it is. But it's nice, you know, it looks nice, I guess. It's not really bankrolling anything.
How many views is that, does that translate to your dollar?
Oh God, I don't even know. We've gotten like about 22,000 views on YouTube so far. So yeah, divide that into $1.17.
Can y'all please talk about means of promotion and distribution besides the obvious? Because I have no idea even what the obvious would be. YouTube, Facebook, what? Film festivals, yeah.
Well, this for one.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is one.
Go see our stuff, please.
Yeah. One of the things we do mostly is go to conventions and try and show our stuff, talk to people. You know, hand out literature. You know, and that's we do most of our promotion through this and through Facebook. And you know, and we did some Google ads for a while. That ended up costing more than I wanted to spend, and so we kind of phased that out. But that's most of the stuff we do. I'm trying to think anything unusual we've done.
We do. We've done Facebook and Twitter and things like that. But one thing that we did.
Oh, Twitter. Yeah.
One thing that we also did, we contacted, bloggers and, film critics, especially genre critics, and said, will you take a look at, our trailer or take a look at a few of our preview episodes? If you like it, would you write a, review for us? And we got tons of great reviews. We got Planet Macabre. We got. God, does he even remember all the ones we got? Fangirltastic.
Oh, man, tons.
Dead Central. Dread Central. I don't even remember.
But Lucy had a PR team put together. Similar to the production crew who worked for free, she also put together a PR team who worked for free.
That is true. So I had a whole PR team that was, they made a press kit, they did a press release, and, they contacted the different people, and sent it out, and people liked it, and, we were on podcasts, and we were, on reviews, and were able to get, like, TV Over Mind and Tube Filter and some of the bigger ones, too, and so it just kind of spread by word of mouth as well. So that was a really cool opportunity.
One of the things that Star Command is doing that's sort of unique and is sort of one of my guilty pleasures is Twitter fiction. Taking your fictional characters and giving them actual Twitter accounts that interact with each other outside of the episodes, and then as the episodes release, treating it as if that just happened in the universe, and having them kind of talk about it outside of what you see on screen, and when you have a group like ours that just can their wits can't stop coming up with humor. We just end up trading off with each other, for the moment of spotlight, and it just really it goes well with the series as a whole.
Yeah, it's largely unscripted and improv as we do it, but it's really fun to see where it goes when some of these other people who are also our writers get hold of somebody's idea and start running with it on Twitter.
I'm one of them that has made a web series as well, and we're about two episodes into our season right now. So, we're looking to do promotions and stuff like that. And you talked about getting covered in, some blogs and things like that. Have you found any methods for what are good methods for contacting people who review these things, and any tips for getting on some of these, places?
Basically, what we did is just, we got a. I think some sort of viral marketing list from some, one of the PR people got a list of, people who are respected in the industry and the genre and, also in television and internet stuff. And we just, contact them and said, we have this new thing, it's coming out. It helped that we were promoting it as a web event because it took place for 31 straight days, starting 3/31, 11. So it was, something that, people could get on the bandwagon of, promoting and wanting to see in a sense of urgency and all that, and and people who followed us on Twitter, anybody who had a podcast or blogged or anything, we said, do you want a scoop? Because they need content, they need material, they need new stuff to blog. They're all about looking for the next cool thing and giving their two cents on it, and so it's mutually beneficial to do it, and it's a great way to spread word of mouth and to get your series some critical acclaim as well.
And it helps if one of the first places you go is to podcasts that you know and you like and you follow already, because if you know something about their material, they're a little more, if they're bigger, they're more open to looking at your material. So if you say, hey, I've been following you since such and such a time, I'm in your genre, would you like to hear more about this? That usually helps too.
I have a question about how exactly you get people with marketable skills like sound engineer to work for free for a small project.
This is why it's good to be in Atlanta right now, because the industry here is up and coming. There's a lot of people that really want to get in on it. A lot of people just starting out. I only started doing this maybe a year ago, just over a year ago. So, I mean, there's a lot of folks who are just really hungry. And it's not like going to some place like LA where everybody's established and you're going to have to pay people. There's lots of people here that
that are really excited about getting in on this.
Yeah, Atlanta is taking its relatively low cost of living and trying to attract the same clout that Manhattan and LA are, with the idea that, hey, you can actually afford to live here, you know, pretty reasonably. And I think there's a studio that just moved here.
But just to throw in, it's like, just because people are willing to work for free here doesn't mean that they're any less talented than the core people you're going to get in LA. What you have here is a lot of people who, they do commercial stuff during the day to pay the bills, but they have the same talent and the same equipment that they do in LA. But they want to do narrative so badly, they want to, you know, stretch those muscles, that's what they really want to do, that if you see a cool project, they'll jump on it. You know, I mean, you know, our people here and our editor, I mean, he's got the best editing suite. The man's got mad skills. And, you know, he just wanted to, you know, he loves fantasy, Lord of the Rings, sci-fi. You know, he wanted to do something besides, you know, working for, you know, Crown Plaza Hotels or something, you know. So there's huge talent here. Just because it's less money doesn't mean the talent is any less at all.
Yeah. It also helps if you get laid off and decide to go back to school for television production, which is what happened to me. And that's actually how we met some of our people who helped with camera op and helped fill in when Amy wasn't able to make it. We had some extra boom ops. Just to plug the school I went to, Chattahoochee Tech, it's got a really good television production program. So if any of you are actually interested in taking it a step further, definitely check out actual formal training, because you'll make so many connections just going to school.
And I'll do a plug for Georgia State University. I went to school there, but also worked there full-time doing video communications. So
let me say something real quick. They don't know this, but I've done a lot of movies myself. And one of the things that we found was, it doesn't have to just be Atlanta. The best thing to do is to sign up for one of those, just like they were talking about, actors and finding those. I've done films in Nebraska, and I've done films in Missouri. And all over the country, so you just got to find the people, because it just like any other industry, like we talked about gaming, a lot of these people are new talents, they just graduated, they don't have a name, and this will give them a name, so just, sorry.
Yeah, just because people are willing to work for free doesn't mean they're working for nothing. We get screen credits, we all get to know each other and network. I mean, you know, there are benefits to doing something for free.
And once experience.
People work together, they tend to work together again. You know, it's like, I would want to work with all these guys again, and I had already worked with Steven before on another project. So.
And I mean, I think that since people know people, then, you know, once you have a sound engineer that you've worked with, then for another project, you can always say, hey, you know, do you know any actors, or do you know a DP, you know, or do you know a gaffer, or, you know, whatever. You can ask people that you've worked with, hey, do you know somebody else? That, you know, you can meet a lot of people through people doing that, so.
We have a question.
You were saying that there are going to be days when there's too much noise around you that prevents from filming. What about dubbing?
That's always a possibility, but in terms of time and money and effort, you want to avoid that whenever possible. Even the big budget films, that's a lot of extra time and money that they don't want to spend. So anytime that you can get good sound on the day, that's really important. It's going to save people a lot of work and headaches later on. And if anybody in here is doing sound, sometimes the director will be like, okay, great, we got it, you know, moving on. But you know that the sound was not good on either one of those takes. Please, can we do one more per sound? You know, don't be afraid to ask, because if you don't do it then, and it's only going to take another few minutes then, it's going to take you, you know, a couple of hours of post work to fix it or whatever.
And sound is crucial. Crucial.
Yeah, a lot of people... I'm going to do my sound rant for just a second. A lot of people, sound is an afterthought. They think, oh, I'll just use the mic on the camera or whatever. Don't do that. You're really lowering the production quality of your production if you don't pay attention to sound. The way you can tell if somebody's done a good job on sound is that no one's going to notice. I don't want anybody to notice what I do. I want people to just watch it and be absorbed into it. And you know, you don't, most people don't walk away from a movie thinking about the sound, unless it was bad, and then you notice that. So,
and it helps
find the sound person. Don't use the mic on your camera. Don't think that, you know, just whatever sound you get is going to be okay. Really make an effort to get it right.
And it helps so much if, you know, when you are doing something on low budget to have, like, great sound effects. I mean, that can just make your budget seem so much larger, you know, if you can make them imagine what you can't afford to show them, you know, if you can make them hear it, if you can make them feel it, which you can do if you've got a great audio person, so.
And just on a tangent, too, since you mentioned multiple takes, one of the things that always kind of drives me crazy about some indie stuff is, like, a scene takes 20 minutes to set up, and the scene itself is only taking 20 seconds to film, and we take two takes, and they're like, okay, moving on. And, you know, I think that if you can take a few extra takes, it gives your editor some additional options. And also, you don't, you know, even when you're filming it, you don't actually notice that, you know, somebody might have left a Coke can in the background or something like that. So, just, you know, I mean, it's different if the scene only takes 4 or 5 minutes to set up, but if it really does, if it's a complex scene, it takes a long time to set up, you know, don't be afraid to take multiple takes. I think that generally, I haven't worked with any actors who are like, no, I'm not going to do it again. I mean, the actors will eventually run dry, like if it's a highly emotional scene or something, but I mean, for the most part, they want their scene to look good. Sound wants the scene to sound good. Everybody wants it. So just, you know, don't be afraid to take an extra, maybe one or two takes.
Yeah, a general rule of thumb is at least 3 takes.
One for safety.
Yep.
To expand upon what you guys talked about, I'm from L.A. and I moved to Atlanta because of the workload down here. And I've worked on Necessary Roughness and The Walking Dead this season, mm-hmm. and it's been absolutely phenomenal flying crews from L.A. and the same level of expertise from the crews down here, so much so that I started my fourth web series down here and pulled members from the crew, and it's been absolutely amazing to do so. Like, and Mandy.com was an invaluable source of information where I could get, like, crews, actors access. It was a national thing, and they have places all over to get crews from. My question now is, where did you get your crews from? Were you working on skeleton crews, or did you have fully fleshed out crews? And in a shill, if any of you guys need a really kick-ass first AD?
Yeah, please give us your contact information. We would be glad to work with you on anything.
My experience on a lot of the shoots I've been on is that we could really use the first AD.
Yes.
Stark Man especially worked on a skeleton crew. We were, you know, we were building our team, and we as we built it out, we go, okay, we need this. We really need a first AD. You know that because as I'm directing, I'd be doing the first AD stuff at the same time, and trying to schedule people and things like that. And then, you know, you come to me on the shoot. Oh, we need this guy. Oh, crap. You know, we didn't call them, or, you know, that sort of thing. So, yeah, and I don't want to dissuade anybody who's starting out. You don't need the full crew to start out. If you're not, Star Command is a different monster because it is a sci-fi comedy series with a lot of special effects and we have a tendency to write a lot of extras into our shows.
Yeah.
And so as a result, it becomes this big kind of beast. But most people are going to do small two-person little things, and you know, for that you don't need the full crew. But it's good to keep in mind what that crew is going to be. I mean, Wikipedia will tell you what all of the crew positions are and give you a basic definition of them, and that's something you need to keep in mind as you're growing. Mm-hmm. You know, as you move from a simple project to a more complex project, who you want to bring in. And really, what happens is you start networking. You know, you might go, okay, I want my show to sound and look good. So you get, you know, a good DP and a good sound engineer. And from there, you're like, oh, well, you know, I need, you know, the DP is like, well, I need a camera op. And I was like, well, I don't know a camera op. And they go, okay, then I need, you know, I know these people. And the sound engineer might be, I know this lighting guy. And so on and so forth. And really, as you start working with more people, you start learning and meeting more people. And you know, it's one of those things. It's like as we were talking about, just do it. If you jump in, you start meeting people, you start bringing in people, and you know, the thing that is also really nice about Atlanta is it is a very small community when it comes to entertainment. I mean, I make a joke all the time that you can't spit in Atlanta without hitting an actor, and yeah. Every audition I've gone on, I run into somebody I know. You know, it's you and. after you've worked on another production, you know another 100 actors. You know, it's that's the thing about the entertainment industry. It seems like everybody knows everybody because as you start doing it, you start to know everybody. And you start learning to meet, you know, you learn how to meet people, and you learn how to make contacts, and you learn how to keep contacts. And one of the best, I love using Facebook for this reason, because you keep in contact with everybody, and usually everybody uses it for a professional purpose, so you know what everybody is doing. So you go, oh, you know, Amy is not doing anything. I can call her up and be my sound engineer for a little while, because she's obviously kind of just bored and sitting around the house. So I've got this project, I can bring her in. I know that never happens. I just use you as an example because it's there.
I'm not bored because you give me so much work with all this sci-fi, sound effect heavy stuff.
Are you done yet?
No!
On the first AD note, definitely get a first AD, because first AD and director are very, very left brain, right brain kind of situations. So anything you can... detail-wise, push off on a first AD that frees up the director to do the more creative stuff that he needs to do. And I think I think having those two working hand-in-hand together lets both of them do their job better than if you had one guy trying to do both things at the same time. He'd be changing his... he'd be jumping back and forth between different tracks mentally, and it becomes like him.
Yeah.
he gets very stressed, so we need our own really kick-ass first AD. So, contact information?
Yeah. Same here, yeah.
To go back to finding crew people and first AD to lead your crew, have any of you contacted 479 or DGA to find out if the days on your projects count towards union initiation?
That is a good question. I haven't, but usually it does.
It doesn't.
It doesn't?
It does not.
Oh, that's right, because it's not professional.
It'll be covered under a DGA contract, but you will not go toward accruing any days in the DGA. So much up for Ryan.
It's usually something that's worked out between the production company and the guild. You know, if you've got a, you know, I know there are indie waivers for SAG, and I don't know much about DGA. I don't know much about WGA, or any of the other unions. But usually, it has to be a contract between the production company and the actual guild to get people that are guild to work on you. And usually, they don't count towards your towards you joining a union. Now, that experience will get you, having that experience in your resume is good, because that will get you onto union shoots, you know, with a waiver and saying, okay, you're coming on and we're going to hire you on. You're not union, but this will count towards your stuff.
So. Speaking of which, a lot of people, when you get them to work for free and bring them in, it's a resume building thing. So you want to try to get them, like when we've worked on shorts and features and stuff, we've got them IMDb credits relatively easily for those. But web series, it seems to be a bigger hurdle. I think the prevailing wisdom is you have to have like something like 500,000 hits before they'll recognize you. Is that true?
No, we're on IMDb.
I'm on IMDb myself.
Okay. We just had a lot more trouble with that and know if there was more to it.
Do you, as the sound designer, do you go to royalty free music to get your sound, or how do you get your sound and sound effects?
Yeah, that's the thing with music. You do have to pay attention to that. I have, through the budget for the Starkman sound, we have a subscription to a sound effects site called SoundSnap. It's like you can unlimited downloads for the year, so you pay for that subscription and you can just, you know, download whatever you need. Music you got to be careful with. If you have musician friends, get them to write you a song, find some royalty for your music somewhere, but be really careful with that. If you're not making any money off anything, then there's kind of no reason for them to sue you. You know, copyright stuff holding up in court basically only matters if there's money to be made somewhere. If nobody's making any money, then there's no reason for anybody to take you to court.
But be very careful about that.
You don't want to, don't take that risk.
They'll usually send you like a takedown notice before they'll actually hit you with anything, but you still want to be really careful when it comes to anything.
With sound effects, if you find something that's like so unique that, and you didn't pay for it, and you think somebody might recognize it, don't use it. Go out and record your own. Little digital recorders are so cheap now. Make your own stuff, or a lot of times what I do with the sound effects that I do download is just mix them together. You know, find two that I like and you know, mix it together and make it my own. You know, don't just use stuff just that somebody else did. You know, make yourself.
And definitely consider the option of, you know, hooking up with local musicians and talent. For the first short that I directed, we had, you know, a local band provide us an original song for it, and they had such fun doing it that, you know, this band has since changed to a different band, but they, you know, they're like, whatever you need for, you know, another season, let us know, show us the scenes, and we'll compose something for you. You know, we'll make what you need. So, you know, it's a good connection to have. Mm.
What's up, guys?
Hey.
Who are you?
There's more extras right there.
I know while we were filming, we were coming up with stuff last minute that was just hysterical. And so I'm curious, how much do you plot and plan, and how much do you allow for the spontaneous ideas and ad-libbing and whatnot?
Well, with Star Command, we're very improv-based. A lot of us come from an improv background. And we do have a script, yeah. And I want that story told. But if you come up with something funny, and it doesn't take too long, and it's not expensive, then yeah, I'll shoot it, and I may use it, or I may throw it out. That's kind of my prerogative. And I'm okay with a little bit of play. But if we start getting down to the wire, then I might be like, let's save that for some other time.
And part of an actor's job is also to interpret the script, too. So actors generally will just kind of go a little bit out of what's written there. I mean, their performance is more than just saying the words. There's actions, there's all sorts of other things that they'll just be doing that you're like, I never thought of that, but that's awesome. Keep doing that. So
ours is... Oh, go ahead.
Coming from a marching band background, if you do it three times and the director doesn't notice, it's in.
You remember the scene we improvised on the Alta Carran flagship bridge, yeah. The office pool? You guys will just have to watch to know what we're talking about. Well, we made that up as the actors. It wasn't even in the script, and they filmed it.
It was the Board of Discipline?
No, it was the office pool, out of the office pool.
Yeah? Oh, yeah, we're passing the... Through the chain of command, passing the suicide dagger back through the chain of command. Got it.
Yeah, so the actors actually made that up and we filmed it, and that's part of the episode now.
I think that kind of thing probably works better with comedy, because on ours it definitely wouldn't. It didn't. Yeah. It's the exact opposite experience, because it's a supernatural thriller, so every, you know, word, everything mattered. And also, since it's only 31 seconds long, it's got to be done, you know, right. We had, like, someone on set, you know, keeping time of each take because they had to be a certain length. You know, if they went over 31 seconds, it was too long. Every frame counted, every second counted, which, you know, I'm sure was, you know, in a different experience, you know, for the actors, but it was necessary, you know, to do what we needed to do. So there wasn't, like, there, you know, wasn't really improv, but they put a lot of, you know, emotion into the takes, and, you know, the fear was very genuine. You guys got the fear down and the screaming and then screaming.
The screaming.
Great screaming. they got the improv and the screaming. Yeah.
That's true. If you, for speaking from a sound design perspective, if you watch the beginning of 31, there's it goes down the warehouse hallway with all the crates, and you hear everybody screaming and pounding in the crates. That was all my Star Command friends, because we were filming in a warehouse too, but a much smaller one, but so it had the same kind of sound quality. And rather than me going finding a whole bunch of pounding effects, a whole bunch of screaming effects, putting those together, putting reverb on it, all kinds of work, all kinds of post work, like we were saying before, it was just easier just to record it. I said, will you guys please all go find a piece of wood to bang on?
We beat up
ourselves. And cover up your mouths, like you're muffled inside a crate, and scream a lot? Awesome. And, like, you know, we did it a couple times, 5 minutes, we were done. And it sounds awesome.
And that's the bridge between the two series.
Yeah. A bunch of people screaming in boxes.
Yep.
Did you still have a question? No? You had a question earlier?
I was just going to say a way to monetize. I don't know, with the Cafe Press idea, selling other types of logo-based items on the site and making sure that's visible.
Yeah. Yeah. We have a store on the site, 31theseries.com, you know. And
I did have another question. What are your goals in the next year for the next step of what you're doing?
The goals for 31 right now are to try and get a sponsored run, to do it, you know, do another 31 days, 31 episodes, 31 seconds, and brand the 31 second idea and have it, you know, paid for by, you know, somebody who, you know, either an ad, you know, person or on MTV.com or G4 or something like that. Meanwhile, you know, using, once you have, you know, something that you can show people, use it to get other jobs as well.
If you do Rolling Rock, you could do 33.
33 minus 2.
Extra 2 seconds.
I know. Yeah. We could, you know, that's considerable. Well, that's 30 so seconds. Yeah. Wow. I have to contact them.
You bet.
You're the DP?
Me, yes.
Can you talk a little bit about what you do, what cameras you use, what type of people you bring on to work with you?
Sure. So 31 was is there feedback now? 31 was filmed completely with this camera and lens. It's a Canon 7D, and I have a 17-50, 2.8. You can do a lot with this lens and this camera. Are you familiar with the DSLR workflow? Yeah, so it's a dual system setup. So this records scratch audio, but most people in the DSLR workflow record with something called the Zoom H4n, which is kind of like a Swiss Army knife of audio. So I use that on all my productions, but I have a set of Sigma lenses. Sigma lenses I think are high in quality and a little bit less, are cost less than Canon lenses. So I have a 10-20, a 17-50, 70-200, and that's like my main set of lenses, but I also have some primes if I'm really trying to go for the shallow depth of field. I prefer the 7D because the sensor size is the same size as 35mm motion film, where the 5D's depth of field characteristics are more closely related to IMAX depth of field because the sensor is actually larger than motion 35. What's that? This is... It's equivalent to 35mm motion film in the 5D. The 7D is equivalent to 35mm motion film.
Right, but what is the size in the one that you're using?
This is 70, so it's 35mm motion.
Okay.
But 35mm still, which is the 5D, is different than 35mm motion, the way that they use the film plane in a motion camera versus still camera. Do you have any specific questions in terms of?
Well, what kind are you the sole?
Yeah, I specialize in like low budget skeleton production crews. Mm-hmm. So we did have one PA, but pretty much it's me running around with the I have a shoulder mount
and skateboard.
Skateboard for Dolly. And I usually do everything. For my job, I make promotional videos for Georgia State. So if you go to gsu.edu/video. I produce all those by myself, including sound, video, lighting. We had a couple 1K RE lights that someone donated.
Yeah, find a friend with equipment too when you're reaching out for friends.
But using natural light and available ambient light is a huge asset. And then just using modifiers. Modifiers are so cheap. So just using reflectors or something to take the light away. And yeah, DSLRs are so cheap. I mean, everyone should go grab one and buy a 50 1.8 lens and have some fun.
Yeah, we used an HV. Was it HVX
2000? Yeah, the HVX 200.
200. Yeah, which is basically it's a standard high def. It's not really a camcorder. It's not like what you would see like the news guys running around with on their shoulders, but it's a decent camera. It's an HD camera. Thing about HD is it's, you know, HD, no matter what you're using. I mean, you're looking at lenses and things like that. I'm not as knowledgeable on the technology as he is, clearly. I'm just like, okay, I point it and I focus it and it looks pretty and there
and
we go.
And remember to white balance.
Yeah,
remember
your
white
balance.
Yeah.
Mostly because we were going for a very old style, like 60s style TV shoot. Look, so we didn't worry too much about depth of field, so we kind of were getting that nicely focused, but not getting too artistic with our shots.
Yeah, so
you know,
we basically used just standard TV setups, you know, medium shots, long shots, over the shoulder, you know, that kind of thing.
Did a couple of J.J. Abrams angled off the floor shots.
Yeah, we did a couple of those for gag effect, basically. But yeah, we borrowed our camera. So definitely find friends that have equipment. I mean, one project we started on that we didn't necessarily finish, we just happened across this guy who was like, yeah, I just bought all this stuff and I want to learn how to use it. And then I think he ended up ditching us, but but you know, you may have a friend that's like, I got this camera, I don't know what to do with it. So
Did we answer where do we see ourselves in the next
what's next?
Oh yeah, well, next for Star Command is we want to get season 2 done, which is the next 3 episodes, and if not 6. We'd really like to get some sort of sponsorship or some sort of membership drive going within the company. My main goal is simply get enough money for the season, just because I love doing it. But you know, if I can make more money and make enough to pay people, that would be wonderful. That'd be fantastic.
I'm getting tired of only laughing when I read it. I want to laugh when I do it.
For our budget was
like 7,000.
Yeah,
but
for 3 episodes.
There's still money left over, though.
There was. There isn't anymore.
Yeah. But the thing is, our initial budget outlay was things like sets, costumes, props. So we still have a lot of that lying around. So now we can just
one-time expenses.
Exactly.
Yeah. We spent I think $1,400 total. $1,400 total on our sets, which we have made very modular, so we can make just about any room on the starship and make them look as unique as we have to, just by clamping together walls and then adding a little bit of digital effects here and there, lighting. We have a full bridge set, full shuttlecraft.
Incandescent work lights at Home Depot.
Yeah.
Put some color gels over that.
Color gels and incandescent work lights, oh my god, we had so much fun setting all those up. And all you have to do is rearrange the gels. It's another hallway from another direction, oh my god. So practically the entire floor plan of our starship has been handled by something like 21 wall sections and a couple of special pieces that we made.
And when you flip them around, they become a cave.
Mm-hmm. Backsides of them are cave sections, typical 60s style chicken wire and paper mache. It made an amazing cave when we got done, too. We actually saw it, the cave in the trailer.
So, from the point of view of the directors, do you have a vision when you're actually filming that, well, I mean, your DP, he has all this knowledge and he knows different lenses and stuff like that, yourself included. Mm-hmm. So how much does that help to bring out your vision? Or if, say, for example, you do have a friend that has a camera and they're like, I could point and shoot. Is there some type of, do you find yourself in a situation where there's something missing where he would bring in?
Well, for me, it helps enormously to have someone as talented as Steven to work with, because I'm not a technical director. All that stuff he said, I only understood every fifth word, you know, or so. I direct from a writer's point of view, so I know what I want. I've written the scene, I know exactly how I want to see it, and, you know, and he makes it happen. You know, between him and Mike, the editor, you know, they make it, you know, become the thing I want it to become, you know. And so I'm able to, you know, watch when it's being shot, and, you know, I sit with the editor when it's being edited and put it together. But, you know, having people that you can really trust that have that technical knowledge, you know, with the audio and the editing and the DP, is so incredibly helpful if you're not a DP yourself. You know, if you're coming from that background, then great, I guess you can, you know, maybe handle it all on your own, I don't really know. But if, you know, coming at it from someone who's a writer, and, you know, I'm like, I can see it, I know what I want done, now help me make it happen. And so the key is, you know, surrounding yourself with people who, you know, understand that about you and understand how you work, and, you know, can, you know, and that kind of, you know, gives them, I hope, that, you know, the chance to be really creative themselves, you know, because, you know, they, you know, help you bring the scene to life in a way that if you were micromanaging them, they couldn't, you know, they may not be able to do. So
from my perspective as a director, I mean, mine doesn't rely as much on on the technical aspects aside from, you know, special effects and things like that. But it's always good because as a director, you're focusing on telling the story. You're focusing on, okay, I'm getting from scene A to scene B to scene C. You know, how am I going to make that flow? How am I going to frame this up so that it now helps that move that along? It always helps to have somebody that is technically minded to say, this scene is weighted too heavily on this side. Like, you know, there's too many actors on this side. You might want to mix things up a little bit. Or a continuity person who's saying, oh, he was wearing that gun on his right hip last time. You know, it's always good to have someone who is... Because as Eric was saying, you know, directing is a very left-brain thing. You're thinking very artistically. And then... or is it right brain?
Right brain.
Yeah.
Right
brain.
See, there's always, right there.
You're thinking very artistically. You're thinking, about story, about character, about content, all that sort of stuff. You need somebody that is focused on the technical side, who can keep you on task as far as that thing, as far as that sort of stuff. Some people can do both. From experience, it's very, very hard, you know, to mix that in your own head. And so it's always good to have somebody that you can lean on for that.
Any other questions? Mm-hmm.
Let's pretend they ask us the questions that we want to answer.
Just out of curiosity, do you have any episodes with this in it?
Whoa.
We've got something similar, though.
Something similar.
He's at our fan table in the basement of the Hyatt.
Yeah, ours is more of an inbred version of that.
Yes.
And I think he's going to sound like a pug dog or something. Yeah.
Yeah, he's snorting through his nose.
We haven't gotten to that yet.
Yeah.
We'll see what it sounds like.
We'll
have to see what our sound designer comes up with for that.
Okay.
Ours is more of a screaming kind of a...
How big is your library?
That's a really good question. It's getting big enough now that I'm going to have to get a program to help me manage it. There's one called SoundMiner, Sound M-I-N-E-R. That's kind of the industry standard, but there's like a sort of a SoundMiner Lite version that you can get that's cheaper. It basically will connect to your sound library database and make it searchable. So you open up SoundMiner that's connected to your hard drives with all your stuff on it, and you need something that's, you know, sort of wet and squishy or whatever, then you can put in, you know, wet, squishy, water, whatever sort of keywords, and it'll search that. Because sound effects, when you get them, or if you make your own, when you name it, put in like as many sort of
tags,
keywords and things as you can. Like, don't just put footsteps, put, you know, footsteps, medium pace, hard shoes, concrete floor, you know, like just describe it as much as you can, and then that way it makes it searchable later when you really need something specific.
Maybe one more, and then that's about it. There's one more. Nah,
is there one?
It's been fun.
Yeah.
I just like to say a last thing about, you know, really just to emphasize again the going ahead and trying it. You know, come up with a cool idea. You know, write a neat script. Get in touch with, you know, some of these people. These are all great people, you know, to get to, you know, hire for projects. Best audio supervisor I've ever worked with. You know, I'm not sure if I can let go of my DP, but, you know, great DP, clearly brilliant, you know, and everything he does, and an awesome actor. And I direct other people's stuff as well. So, you know, so definitely, you know, just go out there and do it. But, you know, it doesn't have to be a huge budget. It doesn't have to be the perfect thing. But do it the best you can. You know, give it your best effort. You know, try not to... You know, even though you want to go out there and do it and you don't want to be held back, don't take it lightly, because it could be something great. It could turn into a bigger thing than you thought. When I came up with the idea for 31, I didn't think it was going to get, you know, as many views as it did, you know, and critical reviews and, you know, 3 distribution, all this kind of stuff, you know, and all the meetings and the doors that opened. You know, I got to, you know, make a pitch to the Sci-Fi Network a couple of weeks ago because of a door that 31 opened. So, you know, do it, but and give it your all, and have fun doing it too. But, you know, get out there and do it.
Yeah. And from Star Command, maybe we should add that these first episodes that we're filming are actually have actually been refilmed. That you guys did them already, the first two, like several, you know, a few years ago.
Yeah,
and if you look at those compared to what we're doing now, it's leaps and bounds beyond. But they went ahead and did it anyway, even though it was super low budget, and now they have the opportunity to do it over the way they want. So
the original Star Command crew are very much stage actors with working with minimal sets and. Some others of us saw that and thought it was hilarious, but hey, we could build better sets for that and volunteered to help out with that, and that's where a bunch of us came together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you put something out there, you might get some fans that say, hey, this was cool, can I help? Yes. Come help.
Yes. And if the idea is good enough, you'd be amazed how many people want to get on board on the project. Yeah. That's how we were able to do ours for, you know, $390. Basically, it was enough money to feed the crew. And everything else we got, you know, locations, you know, support, even the $390, honestly, was all people who believed in the concept and, you know, thought it was cool and wanted to make it happen. So,
yeah. That's one thing you should do, though, if you ask people to come work for you for free, is feed them.
Yes, feed them well.
You should spend money on that.
Well.
You should do that.
Yes.
How many days of shooting did it take for a season?
For 31?
Yeah.
2 days.
2 days. Wow. Everything
shot
in 2 days.
The entire season in 2 days.
It was a whirlwind 2 days.
And pickups for one afternoon.
31 was different than most because the concept was all structured around 31, and so we only had 2 days basically to shoot, or 2.5 days, and we had to structure the shooting schedule and be rigorous. So we didn't have as many takes of shots that we wanted, but we had to be strict because it's not like we had access to this warehouse, you know, whenever we wanted. So we had to stick to the time schedule, and that was tough.
Yeah, huge amounts of prep, you know, when you have like a shooting schedule like that. I mean, you know, storyboarding and trying to, you know, just in keeping, you know, keeping to a schedule. When you get a great location, you got to make the most of it.
Yeah, Star Command had about 4 months of set building on Thursday and Friday, and then filming on Saturday and Sunday, and sometimes on just freshly painted sets, sometimes on sets that have been in the works for a couple of weeks and finally got arranged. So a lot of our filming was done with the order in which we were filming based on when we were going to get these more and more complex sets finished. So a lot of our first stuff was just corridors, and then it worked down to bridge and shuttlecrafts as we got more and more elaborate pieces done.
Cool.
I just wanted to say too, like, you know, in my experience, it seems like that. I mean, I agree with everybody when it comes to, like, you know, just go out of there and do it. In my personal experience, I find that a lot of times you just kind of have to take baby steps. Like, when somebody says just do it, it doesn't mean, okay, go out tomorrow and start filming, because you can't do that if you don't have a sound person or a DP or something else. So just, you know, find one person first. Just start with that. Just, you know, ask around, see if you can maybe just find a sound person, because they might know a DP, or see if you can find an actor, because they might know a sound person. You know, and because I know, like, with me, just from experience, like, I always thought, oh, it'd be cool to, you know, act in independent stuff, you know, but I never really knew how to start doing it. And it, you know, it wasn't like one day I just kind of woke up and I was like, I'm going to be in 31 tomorrow. You know, like, I decided, okay, well, let me just start taking some acting classes, you know, and at least start doing that. And it was through that I started meeting other people and started auditioning for different projects and stuff like that. So, I mean, yes, just do it, but don't be afraid to kind of take baby steps, because if, you know, if you just kind of go with the attitude of, okay, well, I'm going to start filming tomorrow, well, tomorrow's going to roll around and you're not going to be filming. So, you know, just take baby steps and meet some people, help those people to introduce you to other people. You know, try to be as organized as you can would be one thing that I would say. So go ahead and try to, you know, make sure that you know, your script is ready at least, you know, and you've got some locations in mind. You know, but I mean, realistically, it is going to take some baby steps, but don't let that be daunting. You know, just that's part of the process. And the other thing I would say too is, for me, independent stuff is a ton of fun, but you do have to have patience. I mean, just like we were joking about the airplanes and stuff like that, I mean, you know, you're going to have to redo some shots. There will be some days where people don't show up, and, you know, it can be annoying, but it's not. I mean, once you kind of get used to it and you just accept it as part of filming a web series or something like that, you know, I mean, it's not that bad. It's all a learning experience, and you'll learn how to become more organized and stuff like that. So, you know, just kind of, you know, don't worry about just trying to take that first step, but don't try to bite off more than you can chew. Just try to take that first step.
Yeah.
I was just going to say real quick, by the way, for anybody who gets a chance to go back and watch the series, which please do, go watch 31, the series, his character does not actually get killed off, so, you know, it's a big question, so he is alive.
Wait, spoiler!
Because this is like, it's, you know, it's a special audience. You know, just between you guys and us.
We want more material in case we get to do some more.
Leaving it open for the sequel,
this
I see.
This is a really great turnout, and I want to thank everybody for coming out and listening to us talk.
And don't let the lack of any professional experience slow you down. I don't have any real professional experience myself, and they just roped me into it, and things just come naturally.
He just happens to be a genius production designer.
Yeah, build things, and then they just happen.
All experience comes from somebody doing it wrong the first time, and either they teach you what they've learned, or you learn it yourself. But go out and do it, and if you do it wrong, that's something else you can add to your experience.
And we have some flyers at the back, and one of the links on there is to our website. If you want to contact us, you know, ask questions, you know, feel free. There's a, you know, place on the site to do that. And, you know,
and Star Command. Didn't mean to drop it. Star Command is over in the Hyatt. We're down in the fan tables. We're next to the Colonial Marines, I think.
Yes.
And the Battlestar Galactica group.
Yeah. And so you can pick up stuff from there. Us there.
With a second level underneath the lobby.
We have buttons.
And mini flyers.
We get a second season. We'll get buttons.
Thank you.